And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
As Italy went into lockdown this week, as coronavirus victims escalated, the latest figures from Italy at the time of this recording show 9,172 cases and 463 deaths. To encourage people to stay in, bars and restaurants are only allowed to open between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. and only if it's possible to keep a distance of at least a meter away between customers. Religious institutions will stay open as long as people can stay a meter from one another, but ceremonies such as marriages, baptisms and funerals are banned. While supermarkets will remain open, large shopping centres and department stores must close on public holidays and the day before public holidays. Schools and universities are closed and all exams are cancelled. In the UK, many organisations have cancelled gatherings in London and elsewhere. The Union Jack Club in London said that they'd had some cancellations, including the annual regimental dinner for veterans of the 9th Parachute Battalion. These veterans in their mid-90s jumped on D-Day on June 6, 1944. Because of their age and having to travel from various parts of the UK to get to central London, it was felt expedient by the organisers to cancel the event. There is now also a question mark over their annual pilgrimage to the Merville Battery in Normandy from June the 4th to the 8th. Churches in the UK are looking at the custom and practices of communion. Christ Lutheran Church in Petswood has banned the practice of intinction, where a wafer is dipped into the wine by the recipient. There is a risk of fingers touching that wine. The pastor leaves the service just before communion to thoroughly wash his own hands before returning. Catholic church leaders are advising parishioners feeling unwell to stay at home, telling them that it is not a sin to avoid Mass, as religious gatherings across the United States take measures to ensure the safety of their congregations amid the spread of the coronavirus. Physical contact during the making of the sign of peace has been banned by some churches, with others banning the section of the service completely. Catholic services are also emptying out church fonts to prevent parishioners from passing on the virus as they bless themselves with holy water. A decision was made by some Catholic dioceses to suspend serving wine during communion, and many are asking Massgoers to receive communion in their open hands instead of being placed in their mouth. It remains to be seen how the UK and all the other countries fare in coming weeks, and how any government-imposed bans on public gatherings will affect worship or Christian gatherings and meetings. Pope Francis has urged Catholic priests on Tuesday to have the courage to go out and help those sickened by the novel coronavirus hours after Italy was placed on the lockdown. Let us pray to the Lord also for our priests, that they may have the courage to go out and visit the sick and to accompany the medical staff and volunteers in the work they do, the pontiff said during a Mass in Vatican City. St. Peter's Square in the Vatican was almost empty on Tuesday, with only a few dozen people walking around, most of them without masks. In the UK, again as at time of recording, 319 cases have been confirmed and that a fifth victim had died. In Scotland, hymn books are being banned from Catholic church services to protect against the coronavirus. The Diocese of Galloway, which covers Ayrshire, Dumfries and Galloway, is also suspending the use of collection plates. The restrictions, which are expected to be extended to cover the Church's 500 parishes across Scotland, are the latest in a series of measures to reduce the risk of transmission. Instead of using hymn books, parishioners will use disposable, single-use song sheets. The Church is particularly concerned that elderly worshippers, who are most likely to attend Mass, are also most at risk of contracting the virus. Peter Kearney, a spokesman for the Church, said, "While these restrictions are unprecedented, they are designed to preempt the spread of infection and ensure that parishioners can still come to church in safety. For some reason, best known to themselves, people are panic buying toilet rolls. Wouldn't it be much nicer if we were in the situation of people panic buying Bibles?" Bones hidden away by monks during the Reformation have been confirmed as belonging to one of England's earliest saints who founded the country's first nunnery. The 7th century remains of St. Ainswith, a Kentish royal saint who was the daughter and granddaughter of Anglo-Saxon kings, have finally been identified by historians. The relics survive the upheavals of the dissolution of the monasteries in which King Henry VIII aimed to destroy the monastic system after being squirreled away in a lead box behind a church wall in Kent. Her remains were discovered in 1885. However, it is only now, more than 1,300 years after her death, and after carbon dating her teeth and bones, that historians believe they have finally identified England's first abbess and one of the country's earliest saints. The remarkable discovery was made by Kent archaeologists and historians working with Queen's University in Belfast, who confirmed that human remains kept at the Church of St Mary and St Ainsworth, Folkestone, are almost certainly those of the saint. The discovery has been hailed as a stunning result of national importance and has drawn comparisons with the exhumation of King Richard III after DNA confirmed that bones beneath a Leicester car park in 2012 were those of the former King of England. The findings revealed at a special event at the church on Friday evening to mark the start of British Science Week in 2020. Dr. Andrew Richardson, FSA from the Canterbury Archaeological Trust said, "This locally based community partnership has produced a stunning result of national importance. It now looks highly probable that we have the only surviving remains of a member of the Kentish Royal House and one of the earliest Anglo-Saxon saints." Dr. Richardson said that while he was not 100% sure that the remains were those of St. Ainsworth, he added, "But I think we're up there in terms of certainty, in terms of comparing it to Richard III. There's not really any indication it's someone else." Tooth and bone samples were carbon dated, and the results pointed to a high probability of a mid-17th century death date. The relics mark a period that saw the very beginning of Christianity in England and signify a continuous Christian witness in Folkestone that stretches from her life to the present day. St. Ainsworth's grandfather, King Ethelbert, was the first English king to convert to Christianity under Augustine. St. Ainsworth is believed to have founded one of the earliest monastic communities in England, most likely around AD 660 on the Bale, the overlooked historic centre of Folkestone. As well as founding the earliest institution for nuns in England, she was almost certainly its abbess. In 1535, the church was a priory church which had monks. However, following the dissolution of the monasteries, relics were destroyed across England. It is thought that St. Ainsworth's skull was handed over by the monks. However, the rest of her remains might well have been destroyed in the Reformation, along with those of her contemporaries, had they not been concealed in the north wall of the Folkestone Church by the monks. St. Ainsworth is the patron saint of Folkestone and is believed to have founded one of the earliest monastic communities in England, most likely around AD 660 on the Bale, the overlooked historic centre. St. Ainsworth is believed to have died between the ages of 17 to 22. However, her cause of death is currently unknown. The discovery represents the conjunction of two projects, the Finding Ainsworth project and the Folkestone Museum. The project had been locally led and run, with many of the specialists and team involved originating from Folkestone or East Kent. The team has been supported by a large number of local colleagues and volunteers and was funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. The project now needs to raise funds for the next stage of the work, which will reveal more about St. Ainsworth and to ensure that her remains are housed properly for the future and can be securely displayed for research and tourism purposes. The next analytical steps will include stable isotope analysis and DNA analysis. The Reverend Dr. Leslie Hardy, director of the Finding Ainsworth Project, said, "As you walk through the streets of Folkestone, you are walking layer upon layer over ancient history that is now largely hidden from view. Finding Ainsworth was about bringing that forgotten history back to the surface." Dr. Richardson added, "There is more work to be done to realise the full potential of this discovery. But certainly the project represents a wonderful conjunction, not only of archaeology and history, but also of continuous living faith tradition at Folkestone from the mid-7th century down to the present day." A video went viral after a priest is shoved to a floor in a church and then begins throwing wild punches during a brawl between clergy members in the church. The fight erupted in the Church of the Nativity of Christ, an Orthodox church in the southern Ukrainian city of Odessa. Video of the shocking incident was recorded by an onlooker and shows how the row began with two women fighting. A priest in a purple robe then appears to try to break up the fight, but he is shoved to the floor by another man. The priest then springs to his feet and begins throwing punches as other clergymen begin shoving each other and ornaments are knocked to the ground. Local media report that the incident occurred when an abbot became angry with the newly elected bishop of the Odessa Orthodox Church, who had ordered that the abbot be fired. It is unclear if any punishments have been handed out by church officials as a result of the incident. Dublin City Council's conservation officer has contacted Christchurch Cathedral over an RTE news report that appeared to show historic tiles being cleaned with steel paint scrapers. The report said the 1,000-year-old cathedral was seeking volunteers to help restore its 180,000 ornate floor tiles by removing a shellac varnish applied several years ago. Some of the tiles date from the 13th century, although most are 19th century reproductions. The Reverend Abigail Sines, the Dean's Vicar of Christ Church, has described the original floor tiles as a work of art. Following the RTE report, which noted that each of the tiles would take 2 to 3 minutes to scrape clean, expert restorers and conservators complained to Christchurch and to Dublin City Council over what one described as vandalism. Erica Devine, a member of the Institute of Conservative Restorers in Ireland, the RCRI, said she was shocked by the apparently brutal treatment of the floor tiles seen in the TV footage. Removing varnish from encaustic tiles with a steel scraper is highly ill-advised, she said. We all know not to clean our ceramic pans with steel wool. The same principle applies here. Devine said the varnish would have been softened with alcohol and gently removed with a flexible plastic tool. This would normally be done under the supervision of a qualified conservator, following an extensive and detailed condition report highlighting areas of particular vulnerability, she said. Steve Sinnott, a tile restoration specialist who has worked on several Grade 1 listed churches in the UK, said the video appeared to show both glazed and unglazed decorative tiles being hacked with a sharp metal razor. He questioned whether the cathedral had sought help from ICRI before carrying out the work, and asked why shellac had ever been used to varnish the tiles. I'm surprised that one of my colleagues over in Ireland has not been contacted to advise, although the skill set is rare, he said. Sinnott added that the shellac was not an acceptable finish for any type of tile, and certainly not medieval and Victorian tiles. The cathedral said a decision had been taken to remove the shellac after consulting the manufacturer about replica tiles, some of which were installed 2 years ago. It insists that none of the work affects the cathedral's medieval tiles, although the RTE footage did show 19th century tiles being cleaned with a steel scraper. We appreciate the concerns of conservationists and we understand their assumption that the medieval tiles are included in the cleaning process as it was stated in a very general way on the RTE clip, it said. The cathedral added that the newer tiles had begun to break. The manufacturer of the replica tiles advised us that the coating was causing them to retain moisture and explode as they could not breathe, it said. The cathedral, a protected structure that was extensively renovated in the 19th century, said it was now in dialogue with both the tile manufacturer and Dublin City Conservators. It said that while volunteers had attended the cathedral to help with cleaning the tiles, no additional nights were planned. Dublin City Council said it was aware of the issue. It said it had now raised the matter with Christchurch Cathedral in order to ensure that the restoration of the historic floor services are undertaken in accordance with best practice. And finally, Pastor Jamie was nearing the end of his sermon, and he paused and looked at his slumping congregation and said, "You know, I've stopped expecting leaps of faith from you people, but it'd be nice to get at least a hop now and again."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.